can't decide which one I want to start with. Left or right?
Right. I said, do you want me to let you actually get the bottle open before we run and roll this thing in?
Be good.
All right. Welcome to this episode of Barbells and Bourbon. This is officially a streak for how many months in a row we've done this. Now it's just a matter of how quickly I turn this over to get it out to everybody. I still got to share a little bit more of the other one, although we did get it out. But we're back. We almost canceled on each other because we're both, I mean, this is only our first week back and I'm fried and it's only Thursday. So we'll see how that goes. But either way, we're going to get through this. We're going to get it done. And it actually, the topic we've semi-settled on with this is, you know, talking about overload, overpressure, and how we've managed that in our own unique ways. And if we wouldn't recommend how we've done it in the past, maybe some subtle changes if you could go back. Anywho, as always, got to rate and review some bourbon. Andy's not cheating tonight, so I'm actually going to let him go first because he got some, and we'll start there.
So I just opened this, to be fair. So this is called Blade and Bow. I intentionally, it's pretty sweet. You get a little key with it.
Ooh.
Cool little bottle. Nice. I don't remember what I paid for it, $40, I think. I intentionally didn't look up anything. I haven't ever heard of this.
No, I don't know that I have either, to be honest with you.
Cool little bottle. Dig it.
Yeah.
Smells like whiskey.
Dig in the Yeti tumbler.
Oh, yeah, man.
Ooh, what the name. Even better.
I could drink a lot of that.
So just for comparison purposes, Elijah Craig was your kind of, at least for a little bit, that was like your go-to. Where would you put this with that?
This is a poor man's palate, but for the first time ever, you always hear like, oh my God, fruity nut, blah, blah. Seriously, it tastes like those chocolate covered cherries.
Hmm.
So it's definitely like a richer, sweeter finish than Elijah Craig. Not as much heat, which good or bad, depending on what your preference is.
Sure. Yeah.
Very chocolatey.
Interesting.
I'd put it up pretty close to Elijah Craig, maybe slightly behind Elijah Craig. Give it 4.1. It's pretty good.
Solid. Blade and Bow. Got it. So I busted out mainly because you had kind of somewhat referenced it, or we somewhat referenced it last week. This was a gift from some friends, but this is made from the La Crosse Distilling Company. So right here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, this downtown Tootaloo Rock and Rye. This is one that, man, what does it have in here? So ingredients are rye, wheat, orange, maple syrup, cranberries, lemon peel, sugar, and honey. So it was gifted to us, thinking it might be some version of like an after dinner drink, which I'm all for. Just sometimes that little bit of sweetness is what you're looking for. It is not that. It is very much still got its rye base to it. So my wife did not even try it. As soon as she smelled it, she said she was out. It's solid. The distilling company is only a hand, 3 years old. So their whiskey is not aged very long just because they're new. It's fairly light in that regard. You can see that from the bottle. It's terrible lighting, so it actually looks normal, but it is a little lighter, and this one's got a bunch of color in it, but they're like high rye whiskey is pretty light colored. Honestly, you got to be in a time and a place for it. It's not something I would drink a ton of all the time. It's just kind of a special occasion one because of all the extra flavors in it. So I go in like the 3.5 range. Good. Would have people sample it. But I feel like it's one of those you're like, that's pretty tasty. You're like, oh my God, what did they do to the bourbon? Still very good. If you're ever up in this general area, anybody ever listening, the distillery is a cool place to check out. They got some cool stuff going on. I think it'll just continue to get better with time. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I know I did the Nika, when we looked it up last week, and that was smooth. This, not quite, but that's probably definitely the rye base. So yeah. And I am drinking it out of my Madison, Wisconsin mapped glass.
That's way classier than me.
I got these from my sister as a gift. I'm pretty excited about them.
This was Gunny got this for
the. Oh, good gift. Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
All right. In the interest of both of us getting some sleep and not falling asleep or not dozing off on each other. Obviously, COVID's been stressful in and of itself, and I kind of want to semi-remove that from the equation in this conversation because it is so unique and help us that we never have to go through this in our lifetime again.
Or that we get out of this in our lifetime at some point.
It's also true. Very, very true. Since we do this more frequently now, this is being recorded on Thursday, February 4th, 21, but we'll also be out right around then. So we're in theory on the downslope, it sounds like, but with 4 or 5 variants in the world, who knows at this point when it comes to all that. But I know it's been stressful for me. I had a really interesting like week and a half of heart rate through the freaking roof when I was sleeping. No good stuff in that regard, which is something that's never really happened to me before, which was interesting. But I know I've got like my go-tos on what I try and do when I get stressed out, when I come back to, and they've evolved over the years. And I've got to imagine Andy, who has worked in some pressure cooker labs, and just kind of your general take on how you approach life, I think. Live fast, die hard, I feel like might be a good way to say it. But just talking about how you manage, you know, when you've got a metric ton of work to do or things to get through, you know, how do you go about it? What do you approaches do you take? And then, as we were joking about off camera, you know, maybe if you could go back and do it different, what we would do there. So yeah, I don't exactly have the best place to start other than that's our background.
Yeah. I think you could siphon this conversation in two different ways. One, how do you approach the metric ton of work to most effectively get it done? And then two, how you manage the fact that you're under a metric ton of work. And I think importantly, you want to talk about number two.
Less, yeah, so. I think that's probably the highlighted one.
Like you kind of mentioned, I've had a variety of coping methods for stress. More recently, they've been less productive coping mechanisms. Previously, I had a much better handle on it. I think it's clearly highly individualized. So I've gone through the range of lifting was obviously my main burn off or blow off valve for a long time.
Working out used to be my thing too. It isn't anymore, unfortunately.
And then the metric ton takes that away from you.
Hard the time.
And then I went into guitar is another good one. What I found is a consistent kind of pattern for me is I cope best when you're not alone with it. So for me, it doesn't have to be getting beers with buddies or whatever, but anytime I'm just around somebody else, where you can distract yourself from the pressure, it's pretty helpful to me. Even if we don't ever talk about it whatsoever, even if it's not the fact that it's, I think it's for me just a reminder that there's life outside of that desolate area in your mind where you feel like panic mode all the time. That would be one of the healthier, I would say. But of course, as a lot of young men have gone through, I would say currently a lot of my stress management is in alcohol consumption. Not the healthiest, certainly at all. And it's about, I guess at this point, mitigation, which I've been doing for the past couple weeks, trying to make better choices, sleep a little bit more, lift some weights, go for walks, do these little exercise snacks kind of stuff just to, it's nice to, it distracts you, right? So something else to focus on, even if it isn't so much focusing on not doing the unhealthy behaviors, it's a nice little change to focus on just obsessing about how many good choices you can make in a row. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I would say you in particular during this, without going into too many specifics, during this past year coming up now, you've had quite the stress load, having a child, having to be a big part of some heavy decisions that affect a lot of people, and also trying to take care of your family while managing that and mostly being at home.
Sure.
What's been your go-to?
So I feel like I'm my own worst enemy to some degree in some areas with this. And hear me out on it. So I enjoy just reading. Like if I were to flip this around or people were watching, like my whole other wall is just like books. It is my one collection thing that I'm okay with. Like I like having all of them, and I think it makes me look smart. It makes me feel smart, so I go with that. But I'm also a huge nerd in that every book I read, anything I highlight, I type up in the notes, which has been beneficial in the past. And that's enough for me to continue to do it in terms of like looking things up to add, you know, for a paper or something like that. I do the same thing with research articles because, again, huge nerd. Anywho, but what I get myself stuck in sometimes is this, the concept of like the sunk cost fallacy. Like I could be reading a book and it is terrible. I'm not enjoying it. I'm not getting anything out of it, but I started the book. I'm going to finish the book. I know there's a lot of smart people out there that'd be like, that's dumb. Why would you do that? Quit wasting your time.
I'm sorry, I just, that's one I can't get rid of. But ultimately, that can come back to be like a saving grace for me as well, because that's what I've tried to find is, A, if I need to just chill out and go and just read something I want to read. Because also, like, doing coursework, I've got plenty of reading to do. But, like, no offense to it right now, even though this book's not that bad, like, reading the Knowledge Manager's Handbook isn't always as interesting as reading something like The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. That is, that one I could crush in a night. This tries to put me to sleep a couple of times. Feel very good, not the whole thing, but between that or, like, I've got a stack of ones I've read that I need to take notes out of. It's not productive in terms of it's actually getting anything done for me in terms of like really moving something forward, but it makes a pile smaller. It's something that I can control. I can feel good about. I accomplish something. It checks something off the list. And that tends to get me back into like, okay, let's buckle down, figure out what we got to do to tackle whatever the big thing that I really just don't want to deal with thing. You know, I guess it's ultimately controlling what I can control. And that's kind of the fun part. And honestly, one of the reasons I suggested to you is like, let's just put this on the calendar, because then it makes it really worth happening. This is something I enjoy. I don't want to skip over it. It's a great, it is a easy reason to connect. I think we have 4 cents right now in our wallet from the couple, from the ad and the few listens that we get. So, you know, thank you everybody for listening. It is coming back in 4 cents as of right now. But doing that, and then with the other podcasts I do stuff with too, it's just, it gives you that sense of control in sometimes areas that you can't control, like your work, like, especially around COVID. There's a lot of things I can't control. There's a lot of things I might not agree with. But why not come back to something that I actually can control to a degree and have some fun with? And that seems to do it for me.
I think there's something powerful in that sentiment. While we just said we're not going to talk about the productivity per se, I don't think it's how you do the most amount of work. I think for me, I always have my little booklet of my to-do lists.
Sure.
And look at them. A lot of times you'll see tasks day after day after day that you just never get to. And I think
mine go week to week. I like shift them over. I'm like, I swear I got them. I checked that thing off this week.
I think one of the biggest things I've learned is like giving yourself credit through, and for me, it's through checklists, right? So if it's to-do lists, when I show up to work and I'm like, oh, I've got like 20 emails I got to look at, emails are going on the to-do list. And if there's one specific email that's like a big thing, like I know I have to put in an order or respond to some sort of participant email, whatever it might be, I'm putting that on the to-do list, because it's little things that it's almost, it goes back to the make your bed every morning kind of ideology, right?
Yep.
If you can start off on the right foot, you can start getting some momentum. It's much easier to continue a productive day. And I think for me, productivity or accomplishment, like getting work done, is not necessarily a way to mitigate stress, but it shifts the stress towards a type that I'm happy to have. Like the type of stress that I get bogged down with is, like you just said, the things that aren't in my control, the things that I feel helpless about. If it's just that there's a lot of things on my to-do list, I'm fine with that. That's normal. Something I've learned in grad school is the to-do list never gets smaller. You just leave less on it at the end of the day. And that's all right, because it's work. It's a progressive adventure. It's not an acute phenomenon. I got a to-do list a mile long right now.
I think that's something like I've learned, you know, managing and coping with all of this. And it has, I'd be lying if I said that it hasn't, that it's gone well lately just because of the nature of the world. But like, you know, I know a lot of high functioning people, high efficient people, you know, there's a difference between being busy and being productive. I've learned to become okay with just busy from time to time, because it helps me chill out and get back to a place where I can be productive. So that's been useful. But then like the other thing is I used to try and burn it from both ends. It's just not feasible now. And I tried to do it when I was at the same spot you were in. But man, when I figured out that I do better when I actually sleep, or I'm able to leave work at work for the most part, which is the part that's hard now because work is at home and sometimes it's just out of your control in terms of when something actually needs to get done, even if it actually doesn't have to get done at that time. But that still baffles me too. There's some people where I'll get messages at certain times and be like, how do you not have enough time in your day to get that part done? Like, and then I just reap revenge when I get an email at 9:45 at night, but my phone goes on do not disturb at 9. I shoot them an email back at 5:15 in the morning. So karma.
I think there's the most underrated part and maybe underappreciated is, I think at some point work is like working tirelessly, like being busy and trying to work hard is only manageable when you want to do what you do, right? So
sure.
I think that's been a big thing is Nick always says this, my PhD advisor, he'll look at me, we'll be whatever, hanging out at the house, talking about some BS at work. And he's just like, he's like, science is fun, man. And it's just like, it's like this most childish phrase. Like it's almost like, but at the end of the day, it's like, just remember that science is fun is enough to make you grit your teeth through the 11:30 p.m. midnight deadline.
Right.
It's something that I might have forgotten a few times along the journey, and I will forget again at some point. But I think trying to remember that you love what you do makes a lot of the things that are normally like stressful, for me at least, very palatable.
Yeah, I know that's been something, you know, people are like, going back to school, why? It's like, well, because I really want to learn this stuff. Like, it's been fascinating. Like, yeah, there's going to be classes where I'm like, oh my God, I don't care. Like, I don't want to read this. I don't want to learn this. That's going to happen. But even just, again, no idea what this was actually going to be, this knowledge managers thing. But it's fairly interesting when you talk about trying to build out a system to be really efficient in your organization in terms of like sharing knowledge and sharing information. And so when you can apply it almost immediately into the world you're living in or the world you're hoping to live in with your job or whatever it may be, it's not as hard then. Like, yeah, I have a paper due this Sunday, I'm fairly certain that I gotta take a look at, but I don't wanna write it, I really don't. But it's not the end of the world because I'm probably going to pull something out of that assignment that could be useful for me down the line. And that makes it not as hard to deal with.
Agreed. So now looking back, you obviously have the benefit of a little bit more time and career under your belt than I do. Mm-hmm. What would you say, like looking back through grad school, even undergrad, in early career development, what would you say was your best kind of coping mechanism, and what would you go back and undo if you had the opportunity?
In terms of coping mechanisms? Oof. I was hoping you were going to ask that something else along the lines, but that would have been easier to answer.
Stress, man. Cope with it.
I mean, like, going back to grad school for me, and this was, you know, my first 1 or 2 years out as an athletic trainer, learned very, very quickly. I didn't know what I was doing, you know, passed the test and everything. So I knew what I was doing, but I had no idea what I was actually doing. And that would follow me, you know, single for part of the year, I'm thinking, but, you know, still, you know, not married, not, you know, the person I was dating didn't live where I was. So, you know, yes, we were in contact, but it wasn't like, you know, I was coming home to them. But man, I would carry work home with me all the time and then stress about it and pretend, in hindsight, I will call it pretending, to try and go in and figure out what the answer is. If I go back, you know, I'm 10 years out from that. If I could go back and have that same job again, oh boy, would I do it completely different. Would I be able to look at things so differently? And that's how it should be, but my life would have been so much easier if I knew half of what I know now back then in terms of that. But so my coping mechanism, I think, was to try and figure it out. And I would stress about it and it would be bad in terms of that. And it made for not a great existence. So if I go back and change that, like, yes, I understand that there were reasons they were stressful, but actually allowing myself to understand it's going to be there tomorrow. You can't fix it tonight. You can always go and look and try and figure something out, and I would do it better. That would also be a coping mechanism, to do that better if I actually knew what the hell I was doing then. But yeah, just not taking that home so much where it literally starts seeping into the rest of your life. And that's just, it's not a fun existence. And that's made my life a lot better. And it's helped me in working with younger, like, ATs, and just basically seeing myself and being like, yeah, I've been there. Here's what you got to try and work through. I know it's going to suck. I know it's not easy for, you know, it's easy for me to say it now, but man, you got to figure out how to work through it, or else it will consume you and it'll shorten your career, and that's not good.
Yeah, something clearly I struggle with a bit. Obviously, I don't perceive it as a struggle because at the current moment, I'm where you were, whatever, 10 years ago. So being in the kind of set up a placement for a career portion of my life, I tend to want to bring things home. Like, I tend to want to wake up, work until I go to bed. Obviously that doesn't happen. But I'm not opposed to, like, if I end up hitting a groove and I'm working till midnight, I'll work till midnight. That doesn't upset me. But I mean, it's clear to me that even some of the people I respect most in the field, who used to act in that manner, eventually got out of it. But I struggle with whether that's a bad thing at this point, right? Like, if it means, I think of it as sacrificing now for a better placement later. Mm-hmm. So basically paying into the system now so I can take back some of that time when I get into the middle of kind of my career, right? Some people say it's awful and you need better work-life balance. At this point, I don't disagree, but I don't agree. And not sure the best way to go about that.
I think that's a, you know, yeah, I want to, I think that's a good point we can get into here for a little bit, but you know, I'm not pretending to be armchair psychologist, but you know, I think there's a couple kinds of stress, and this is going to be stupidly simplified. So if anybody's listening to this that knows more than it, I'm sorry, knows more about it, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, there's distress, the stuff that's the negative, right? You know, or you're bringing your work home and stressing out about it because you don't really want to do it, but it needs to get done, but it's just going to be a problem throughout the whole process. Versus like this eustress where, yes, it's stressful, but it's something that you're enjoying and it's ultimately kind of a positive because it's elevating you to a higher degree, to almost what you said, like, if I can put it in now and do so strategically, it's going to set me up to get there in the future. You just got to allow yourself to get there in the future. That's something else I kind of learned. Like, you can't keep saying the future is tomorrow. Well, you can, but then just keep saying that because it will always be true. I'm curious, and I'm going to throw it back to you here in a second on like your take on work-life balance. I had, just because things have changed with obviously COVID and then having started a family, of like work-life balance when you really like your thing, like what you do, and it becomes kind of a part of you, isn't really a thing. Like, it's too hard to draw a clear line.
I've
come to like the concept of work-life like flow. You know, and that's one I always use specifically in the job of athletic training, is like, there's going to be no way to have work-life balance in quotes during football season. It's just busy. I try to do a good job to not be there more hours than I need to, but it's just busy. And so in that part, my work part of my life is flowing higher than the life part of it. But then when football's done, we can reshift this thing around a little bit to make sure. And so, yes, it ultimately maybe becomes a little, quote, balanced, but you just kind of, it's this like wave of things depending on what it is. And again, like me coming home and reading a book about leadership or organizations or whatever it is, like some people are like, why do you keep reading? Or like, why are you working or reading a journal article? Well, I enjoy it. Like, I like learning about it. Like, it's not a bad stress for me to sit here and scroll through that and pick up a couple nuggets of information. And so to me, that's not, there's still a line there. That just happens to be what I like to read versus, no offense to it, Harry Potter or something. So
I think that's an important, I actually had this argument pretty, we'll say passionately, with somebody relatively recently, somebody who had, I think, their intentions were good, but I just disagreed pretty wholeheartedly about, they were saying basically, I need to slow down and take more time to rest and recoup and leave more of work at work and have more life to the work-life balance. But the only thing, obviously, when you're impassioned a bit, like you have a tough time trying to be the most intellectual that you could be if you were more calm. The only thing I could coherently spit out was something like, work-life balance for me, I define my life by my work. So it's hard for me to say work-life balance in any meaningful way, because I'm in a place that's away from my family. I have a great small group of friends here, but they're all coworkers as well. That, not to say I wouldn't take a bullet for them, but they're all coworkers. So it's like, my social hour is going to work and seeing the people in our lab and seeing the people in the department. And so I just have a tough time. I have a tough time justifying sitting at home or whatever, not necessarily sitting at home, but doing anything but that, because these are the people I like. It's the thing I like to do, which is work and science. I like being productive. So it's definitely, I get what you're saying. I don't see that as a bad thing. Like, I'm not sitting at work. I mean, there are obviously sometimes in the lab at 11 o'clock and I just want to bash my head against the keyboard. Sometimes I get in at whatever, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and I'm pissed off that I have to be there so early. But I would say 85% of the time, like, I'm working, there's nobody over my shoulder telling me I have to be there. I'm doing it because I like to and because I see the benefit. And I think that is where maybe disagreements happen with the whole idea of work-life balance.
I always get crap from Kelly about why I like to talk about work so much when I hang out with Doc or Corey or whoever. We get talking about stuff, and it's just like, because aspects of it can be really fun, and it's fun to talk about ideas and the future. And, you know, God, what is the quote? I'm gonna have to look it up. Yeah, it's like the, I'm gonna look it up because I'm gonna butcher it if I don't. Just about what you talk about, and all right, I'm gonna see. Give me 1 second.
I'm gonna pause this real quick.
Anyway, the quote is from Eleanor Roosevelt. That's at least who it's attributed to. It's the great minds that discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, and small minds discuss people. I had seen that years and years ago, and I don't want to call myself a great mind, but at the same time, that's what I really enjoy talking about with people. Like, let's talk about an idea or a concept or something that, you know, we could work on or do or whatever it may be. Like, that makes it more exciting than it is just sitting around, for lack of a word, bitching about what so-and-so did, you know, or didn't do, and now that's all you're talking about. So
I also have this realization along those lines today. I had, obviously, like, the past semester was a bit dicey, the past two semesters, for trying to teach.
Sure.
Uncertain, and I'm not, yeah, it's not just for the people who teach. It was bad for students as well. But I don't think I did as well as I could have in the past semester. And I think what I'm realizing is part of that was me saying, like, I just don't enjoy teaching. Which I'm not 100% convinced is true, but I'm not 100% convinced is false. Either way, it's a natural reality to the career path I chose. And so I told myself, kind of prepping for the semester, like, teaching's not that bad. If you make it involved for them, you're going to inherently be involved. And I think just changing the script around how I view teaching has made teaching way better. Like, instead of being real annoyed about having to log into Zoom and do these classes, I don't mind it. It's fun. You get students more involved. You can kind of reformat your ideas. It's always nice to reinforce basic understanding of exercise phys, and just get an opportunity to talk to people you would never otherwise talk to, you know what I mean? So I think just the not necessarily along the same lines as a quote, but I think instead of bitching all the time about stuff, I think sometimes we don't give speech the power that it deserves to affect our emotions. It's a long, long-winded way of saying that, but...
The only thing I thought about with that too is, you know, it's like that reframing of it. You know, how can you take this as something that, you know, maybe isn't as useful as you would like it to be, but make it something that could actually be useful? You know, like the course you don't want to take, but you can pull something out of it that's potentially going to be useful, you know, in the future. Like, I finished a sports admin class. I'm not going to lie to you. It's something I would have probably been just fine doing as an undergrad. A little upset about that. But at the same time, now I feel like, well, maybe sometime down the future with this degree, I could teach an adjunct sports administration class. Got the book, did the different things through it, could really come up with all this. So let's do that and make it worth it. So if that opportunity ever arises, I'm right there and ready for it. And so, you know, like just reframing your thing on teaching and getting that out of it is made it better for you, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's honestly kind of nuts how much stuff like that makes a difference. Or even just, we talk about this in kind of our group quite a bit, but who you surround yourself with is also hugely impactful, obviously.
Yes, can't argue with that.
Someday we'll all get together again.
Right. We should put one of those together. Doc mentioned that like a month ago and I never followed up on it. Just putting another bro happy hour together on a night just to get everybody together. I'll have to put one on.
Not on the first Thursdays and hopefully not at 9 p.m.
Yeah, we can figure it. Maybe it'll be a Tuesday.
Stress is a hell of a thing, man.
Oh, yeah, man. And I was just going to say if there's anything else you want to cover, but maybe this is a good time just to wrap it up since I know we're both struggling and contemplating messaging the other about pushing this, but
yeah. The
biggest thing I've learned is it's okay to not always be productive in terms of like always driving forward. Like for me, just in the longer run, I become more of I'm more of a morning person, so I can get up, get some coffee going, get down. And if I need to really think about something or get some work done, that's when I operate best. If I need to write a discussion like I did today, I should write it in the morning. Because I would not do well writing it after the little one goes down, after dinner, because I just want to start throttling down at the end of the night. But if I'm stressed about something or, you know, something's going on, that is the perfect time for me to do the remedial check an item off the box, take the notes out of the book. I don't have to think about it. I'm still doing something that I deem productive in quotes, you know, but it makes me feel good about it. It's one less thing on a pile. If the pile gets smaller, that's a good feeling. And going about it that way. And it's just figuring out what works for you and trying to make it as constructive as much as you can. And trust me, I drink my plenty share of bourbon and beer. And sometimes that's it's that and watching some show or movie I've seen a bajillion times and just relaxing. And that's just what it is for that evening.
I'll close with a similar but opposite. I think it's just two perspectives, just sure. Different career stances, right? Like I'm still building, you're kind of reaping what you did and still obviously building. I'm not saying you're complacent by any means, but no, yeah. I think the alternative for the person who's trying to build a future is also realizing that it's okay to not be super stoked all the time. Like, to not – somebody – I think it was a PhD student, PhD interview that we had coming into our lab or potentially coming to our lab, who asked, like, are you guys happy there? And for some reason on that day, on that specific circumstance, it kind of, like, struck me to think pretty introspectively. And what I realized is, like, I would not say I'm always happy at work by any means. And I think that is in and of itself is stressful to a lot of people. But what I realized is, like, acute unhappiness, when it serves a purpose of, like, I'd rather be kicking my feet up or hanging out with buddies or going to play some pool, whatever. When you have to bog down and work, acute unhappiness serves, again, the ultimate goal of chronic happiness, right? So what I said was, I wouldn't say I'm always happy, but at the end of the day, if I put in a good day of work, I feel fulfilled. And I think fulfilled is a higher order of happiness, because emotions are transient and we tend to be very negatively driven. Like, people are much more upset about losing $5 than they are happy about getting $5.
Just finishing a book on all of the work they've done around some of that stuff. So yes, fantastic point.
So that would be where I'd end up.
Yeah, I got nothing for you. That was awesome. Amazing point. I the fulfillment thing, couldn't agree more. So extremely well said, sir.
Thank you. And we will see you guys
in another month.